Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Campfire Stories, Volume 4, Case Number 1. After consolidating the reports with a lone survivor of the following event and the autopsies on the recovered military personnel bodies, the following is a fairly accurate recollection of the events. At 00 hours, the military unit was sent to investigate the reports of an intruder. This was a training exercise to judge the capabilities of lone survivor as a team leader. Approximately 40 minutes later, the military unit had an auditory reconnaissance of Wendigo, number 0183. Estimated identity of cryptid is John Sampson, a hunter who went missing around 1703. Recovered body, Private Jacobs, reported a branch snapping. The military unit halted and tried to locate the source of the sound. Around 040 hours, Wendigo, number 0183, charged the unit and snatched Private Second Class Hill, snapping his neck. Private Potomi went to investigate but was grabbed by the claws of Wendigo, number 0183, and his throat was slashed. Specialist Jameson was dragged under another bush. Claw marks indicate his death was slower as the lungs were punctured multiple times. Private Second Class Erickson was able to shoot Wendigo number 0183 when it charged the group again. As multiple previous cases have established, standard ammunition fails to leave a true impact on the body of a Wendigo. Further evidence that older Wendigos are virtually immune to small arms fire. Erickson was killed immediately when his skull was impacted from the top, severely misaligning two vertebrae, severing the spinal cord and crushing the throat vertically. Lone survivor was knocked aside. Estimated time duration for the encounter with Wendigo number 0183 is 3 minutes. Acting Corporal Jenkins' body was never recovered. Of special note in this case is that this is one of the first times that this cryptid in question spoke in response to the presence of the survivor. The word empty is confusing, as Wendigos are traditionally voracious in their pursuit of human flesh. Autopsy summary of Erickson, Jacobs, Potomi, Jameson. Erickson, fractured skull from overhead strike from cryptid. Catastrophic damage to the neck and throat area due to the force of the impact. Severing of the spinal cord implies death was instantaneous. Jacobs, multiple stab wounds from the claws of the cryptid. Secondary infection was not able to infect the body. Body was still cremated as per protocol, as was Potomi. Potomi, throat slashed by the claws of the cryptid. Note, this is the same Potomi who witnessed the encounter of the police officer who encountered Skinwalker, Michigan Subterritory Number 4. Said police officer also reported on the mush corpse in the vehicle. The two deceased military personnel named Hill and Jenkins were not recovered, likely taken as food by the Wendigo number 0183. Judging by the enforced counseling sessions for the survivor, it seems unlikely he has willingly caused the incident. Reading over the case files, I tried to figure out the implications of the things that caught my attention. Had these people really figured out who the Wendigo was, or was it just guesswork? Had there been enough encounters for the filing system to be displayed in the way you saw it? I was aware Potomi was given the choice of enlistment or prison. It makes me wonder if the incident they refer to was the same case that caused them to make that decision. Why are skinwalkers designated by territories? Could it be that given their ability to shapeshift makes it impossible to identify who they originally were? The mush corpse is not a reference I am familiar with. While I could imagine why it was called that way, the term mush seems overkill. But given the wealth of resources I have access to, I chose to see what these morticians and their networks have concluded regarding Wendigos. Wendigo, humanoid cryptid. While we have been unable to locate the first known Wendigo, we have concluded that the original story of these beings is more fact than fiction. Wendigo are humans who, after prolonged starvation, consume human flesh, and in the process are cursed by something which causes their transformation. The transformation is an approximate growth of limbs by 22%, and the fingernails elongate, sharpen, and harden to assist in catching more humans to consume. Why the Wendigo feel the need to consume human flesh is not readily apparent. It is speculated that it is the only meat that sates their never-ending hunger. After consuming human flesh of a sufficient quality, older Wendigo require more. They return to a place of significance for them and hibernate for years. Fire seems to be a bane to these creatures, as it makes holding off the younger ones a more viable tactic. However, Wendigos who are over 2 centuries old seem to ignore the heat of the flames and ignore it as a stalling tactic. Weaponizing it against Wendigos is the far superior option. However, most people, when facing cryptids, seem to leave their rational minds behind as they see something truly abhorrent to them and seldom take the time to mull through the problem. Given that Wendigos gain in strength and speed, it is understood why humans rarely have the time to plan. Cases involving firearms were conflicting until it was deduced that younger Wendigos were vulnerable to small arms fire until their bodies matured to resist caliber smaller than a .22. Very few encounters have involved active military personnel, so judging that firepower is difficult unless more encounters were had. Knives are an effective if foolish idea for Wendigos who are less than a century old. Their behavior indicates that they shun civilization. Reasons why are speculative. The information was illuminating. Hopefully, this will be of benefit to you all. If there are any other cryptids that you wish to know about or unusual deaths, please let me know and I will try to locate the appropriate case file. Case number 2, Dogman. Initial victim is an autistic male of 9 years old. Severe anxiety around strangers. Communicative abilities restricted to barely legible writing in a large diary. Secondary victim is the child's mother. Father's whereabouts unknown, not important to this case. 3 weeks prior to the incident, she purchased an emotional support animal to see if it would alleviate her child's anxiety issues. Location is a lifestyle block in the state of Montana. The land is family owned and was seldom in use. Financial information was further obtained in the process of our investigations into the event and deemed inconsequential, but recorded for the sake of necessity. The initial victim was content to be left alone, but according to the counseling adhered to by the mother, she felt this would hamper the social development of the child. Records from these counseling sessions indicated that the counselor would explain that due to levels of anxiety the child exhibits in social situations, there would be little chance for future development. The counselor did gently coax the mother into acquiring an emotional support animal that the child might feel bonded to. Given the location where they lived, a dog was suggested. According to the audio from the nanny cam footage, the bonding process was a success, with the initial victim showing some self-confidence, even looking his mother directly in her eyes. The dog was well-trained and didn't react to the extreme emotions exhibited in the lounge area. 3 weeks later, the mother could be seen running into the lounge. The time was quite late, judging by the lack of light outside the windows. Blood could be seen on her clothing. Judging by her wails and screams, the child was dead, mauled by some animal. Clutched tightly in her hand is a cordless phone for the house. While the phone line was disconnected, the microphone still worked and the hard drive in the base was still recording. The mother was aware that the phone lines weren't working and she could hear scraping movement upstairs. This was confirmed via the recordings acquired. She was then seen rushing to a window and she looked out in shock. After significant alterations of the video recording, a lupine humanoid cryptid, known commonly as a dogman, was seen skulking at the edge of the camera range. Presumably, seeing this, the mother backed away and turned as a canine head peered around the corner. Nearly hitting its head on the frame door indicated that it was not of a standard height of any known dog breeds. It stalked into the room on its hind legs. The coloration looks like the emotional support animal previously mentioned, Parts of the fur seemed matted down, likely with blood. A third dogman also entered, but was on all fours. Judging by the gait, it seemed unsure of its pace. This could be attributed to the polished wooden floor. The secondary victim was frozen in fear when she saw the two cryptids. The attack was swift and coordinated. The one on all fours went low, while the standing one went high. Her death was quick. The third one joined the other two for the meal, after the standing one unlocked the door. They then walked to the door, opened it, then bounded off into the night. Police investigation came as part of an initial missing persons report after the mother hadn't called her family. Police found the bodies and they opened a homicide investigation. The case remains open. The bodies were diverted from the regular coroners to ones affiliated with his forum. Autopsy report. Initial victim, multiple bite marks to the arms and stomach area. Scratch marks from a large paw evidenced on the limbs. Micro tumors located within the brain, which could indicate the autism and social anxiety problems. Secondary victim. Bite wound on the ankle, severing an Achilles tendon. Single bite mark to the throat. Evidence that the stomach area was gorged. Missing organs include ovaries, kidneys, uterus, stomach, pancreas, liver, 95% of the intestines. Secondary investigation, our primary one. Scouring the nanny cam footage shows in the weeks leading up to the attack, movement could be seen during the day of the emotional support animal, no anomalous movement detected. 5 days after the bonding, a dog man cryptid could be seen creeping up to the house. The emotional support animal stood up and walked over to the wall opposite of where the dog man crawled to. The ESA stood there for several minutes until the dog man cryptid crept away. The initial victim just watched his ESA stood at the wall, while the initial victim is normally next to the ESA at all times, even during sleep. The movement at the edge of the nanny cam view resumed until the night of the attack. Movement in the peripheral showed two dogmen approaching the house. One skulked at the edge of the light on all fours, while the others ran to the side. Screams could be heard from a location suspected to be the child's bedroom. Soon the mother could be seen entering the lounge in the state previously described. Several journals were taken as evidence in the initial investigation. Upon discovery of the contents within, they were switched with duplicates with explicit mentions of dogs being removed. The mother made note of several minor incidents when her child would stand in the window and look into the forest. When she asked if he would like to go for a walk in there, he refused violently. As soon as she mentioned that they wouldn't walk, the child immediately stopped and hugged his mother. Judging by the description, the following incidents appears to the same location the ESA would stand when the dog man approached. The mother advised, while she did some basic yard work, that she always felt trepidation when she looked to the forest area, like there was someone watching her. She tried to muster the courage to go look for herself, but didn't want to risk leaving her child alone. The journals of the boy seemed nonsensical, but after multiple encounters with children on this spectrum, certain clues were common among all of them. These journals were able to get upgraded in their standards of language. The initial victim was aware of the cryptid presence. When he would see the dogman standing outside his window, he would scream for his mother, caused the cryptid to flee. This happened for about 2 years. One day, while he was walking around the backyard, within view of his mother, he felt the dogman approach. Its claws snagged his shorts and started to drag him away. But his mother fortunately spotted her child disappear from view. When she approached, the dogman ran, leaving the child behind. What people would find most chilling is that the day the emotional support animal, ESA, stood near the cryptid was referenced in the book of the initial victim. Doggy was wrong. Looked like doggy, but not doggy. Ma not know doggy wrong. Doggy looks at me like the bad thing at times. It is surmised that the ESA was turned into a dogman through unknown means, as three dogmen were seen running from the house. The ESA dogman was able to use his paw to turn the lock by hooking the key in between his toes. The handle was easier to manage. Details on the cryptid dogman. Dogman is of a common cryptid type, the anthropomorphic animal. While it doesn't have full human features, it is able to walk on hind legs for extended periods of time and displays near human intelligence. Significantly weaker than the most supernatural Wendigo or Skinwalker, regularly available firearms are enough to kill a dogman. Reports indicate that upon death, dogmen revert to their more base canine form. Case number 3. Mothman. Research in popular culture indicates that this swing cryptid is an omen, mainly connected with ill fortune. Correlations between alleged Mothman sightings and disasters seem to indicate this. There are not many cases involving the Mothman, mainly due to the fact that it deals with dead people directly caused by cryptids or other unexplained events. Since the Mothman does not kill, this greatly reduces the amount of information that is able to be accrued. There are some journals of Mothman events scribed by those who have seen the cryptid. There's a journal of a 15-year-old girl. Most of the contents are what you would normally find inside a journal of a teenage girl who still kept up with this tradition. The entries of interest in regards to the Mothman are very few. The first entry describes a walk the girl took through a wooded area near her school. She noted how she's confident walking through the woods by herself due to her athleticism. She has also had several years of wilderness experience. The walk was supposed to be about 3 hours. Approximately 40 minutes into the walk, the girl spotted a dead deer with circular holes in the chest area. She looked around for any sign of a hunter, but this trail was a known walking area, so the chance of a hunter risking the death of an innocent person would be extremely unlikely in her purview. She stood up and continued on her way, and she was bothered by a feeling she could not describe, like a light buzzing in her mind that kept her very vigilant. After 10 minutes, the girl was brought to a halt when she saw a tall humanoid with wings glaring at her with red eyes. The sight of this monster caused the girl to bolt. The girl would make notes indicating she was paranoid about this creature. 2 months later, she would detail her second encounter. This one was more terrifying, as her paranoia had dwindled down slightly until it landed by her bedroom window. Its glowing red eyes would peer into her room. Seeing this tall monster gaze at her brought her paranoia back. She screamed at it to leave, and when her parents came to investigate, they could not see any sign of the monster she described. This is when things took an unusual turn. When the girl was able to control herself long enough to conduct her own investigation, she noticed some large gouges in the wall and on several trees. She took photos with her cell phone, and her writing became significantly more manic. She would claim to see it more and more. It began to have a deteriorating effect on her sanity. Her parents pulled her from school due to the repeated screams she would exhibit. Eventually, the girl would be placed into a mental institution. Her suicide occurred 5 years later. Second investigation. While some hallmarks of the encounter were similar to other encounters, the secondary investigation brought to light some intriguing details. First of all, there were no records of a deer carcass found with holes in it along any walking trail. The closest thing was a dead squirrel, which had a singular circular hole in its neck. This was quite decomposed when found, but nothing else found matched the injuries as described. Obviously, the false sightings while she was in public were noted down, but the photos were what drew the attention of the investigators. Out of the 5 working the case, only one of them could see the apparent damage. But going by what the investigator described and what was noted in the journal, they were almost as conflicting as they were corroborating. This investigator was a known conspiracy theorist who was very fastidious in his investigations, while almost none of them bore fruit. The one leading to his current employment certainly did. This has led to speculation that the apparent correlation leading to the popular belief that Mothman is a harbinger of tragedy could be its ability to cause people to become obsessively paranoid and allow people to look for links that aren't actually there. The parallel theory, as it is called, 2 lines, one denoting tragedies, add the other for Mothman sightings. Some dates would mix, but given the population density, The fact that technology is not infallible and human error is also a leading factor. It could be explained that it is two lines of events, not overlaying but happening to share the same dates some of the time. I'm unsure of what to make of this myself. While this sounds like it is a sort of debunks the Mothman, I think there's a little more to it than that. Imagine being able to turn some of the more observant enemies into a paranoid fool that wouldn't be believed because the paranoid person no longer fully functions on the same societal norm. Their actions would discredit them, and they would be the boy who called wolf. While they do actually see the wolf, no one else can. It makes no sense to me. I'm not sure if it makes sense to you all, but this is one possible interpretation. The Mothman is an aerial scout unit, was able to disguise itself in paranoid delusions. A scout for who or what is yet to be determined. The second interpretation is that it could be weeding out those vulnerable to the rake, as a cryptid the rake is able to have a more psychologically draining effect on those who are unfortunate enough to encounter it. And the almost nihilistic viewpoints those people suffer could easily have been paranoid delusions instead. But this is just my interpretation of the case I have seen and transcribed. Case number 4. The Rake. The Rake is a cryptid, feared for the emotional impact it has on its victims. From the cases I've read, the Rake is related to the Crawler and the Fleshgate. All are pale humanoids whose primary method of locomotion is crawling. While the Crawler and Fleshgate seek flesh to consume, the Rake does not appear to, feeding off of the negative emotions it can force from others is the main theory of its diet. The various autopsy reports indicate otherwise. In the western United States, near 3 designated skinwalker territories and 7 suspected Bigfoot domains, a rake cryptid maneuvered its way to a small commune. This was a commune of 4 adults and 5 children. The point of this commune was the return to nature ideology. No cell phones except for an emergency satellite phone. Due to this, most of the information is from the victims themselves, journals and scribbled notes, that and the words the satellite phone was able to record. The commune was self-sufficient. The runners, as the people in charge dubbed themselves, as they were running the commune, were not the first people to notice the presence of the rake. Like a horror movie cliche, it was the youngest, a 4-year-old male. His journal had the word rake randomly dispersed in the writing for 2 weeks. The more alarming journal post was when the boy mentioned his scary friend the rake wanted to be let in. So the boy let his scary friend in. This could have been dismissed as fake, but the eldest daughter wrote an evil thing was sitting on the end of her bed, watching her with hollow eyes. Every so often, it would breathe. After what felt like hours, it left, and one word appeared in her mind, rake. This repeated for 4 days, but with each successive night, the rake would pour nihilistic thoughts into the eldest daughter. Depression was swift. Journal entries from the parents noted that their eldest daughter was withdrawn and would only mention one thing. The rake is here for us all. The youngest would exclaim that the rake was a friend, but when pressed into revealing his friend, the boy would mumble that it is shy. The eldest son, believing his younger sibling, decided to hunt for the rake. The uncle of the commune accompanied the eldest son. Their bodies wouldn't be recovered until the secondary investigation. Subsequent journal entries indicated that the voices of the two would-be hunters could be heard, but the youngest would block the door and say his scary friend was teasing the commune. When pressed for details, the youngest boy described his scary friend and how he would make him and his eldest sister think thoughts of death. The rest of the commune tried to convince the boy, except for the remaining sibling. She would show the sketches she had been drawing for months, sketches of a pale individual with very long black claws, voids for eyes, gazing directly at the viewer with an intensity that should be impossible. The last journal entries of the commune, except for the youngest, expressed private concerns, as they all had those feelings of nihilism and of the inevitability of the rake. The youngest boy's last written words were, "I'm sorry." Autopsy number one. Eldest boy, slashing mark to the calf muscles, cleaving the muscle in two, presence of adrenaline system indicates that he was in a state of fight or flight. Femoral arteries pierced cleanly. Death was slow due to smaller puncture wounds on the femoral artery. Autopsy number two. Uncle, deep lacerations to the chest. Wounds to the arms indicate defensive wounds. Autopsies 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Mother, father, middle child, a boy. Youngest son, eldest daughter, aunt. All found dead, sitting at the dining table. Post-mortem evidence indicates the bodies were moved after death. Every person sitting at the table showed no outward signs of death. However, when the brain was examined, multiple scars were found throughout the brain. All the scars were arced as if in repeated bite marks. Missing child. Youngest daughter. Evidence strongly implicates the daughter as the one who moved the bodies of the family to the inside of the commune dining area. Her fingerprints match six pictures placed in front of the appropriate victim on the table. Footsteps of the youngest lead out of the commune and disappear alongside the tracks of the rake. Rake information. The rake is an entity that feeds on induced nihilistic thoughts. People who are naturally nihilistic are immune to the enhancing effects that the rake naturally emits. This is thought to be an extension of the crawler's fear aura. The rake is a humanoid creature that moves on all fours like an animal. Long claws are seen from the forelegs. However, the evidence indicates that the length is a gauge. While the rake does have claws, as evidenced by the hundreds of bodies it has attacked, the length is quite short, but the length is likely to allow the rake to deduce how much nihilism or basic fear that the would-be victim produces. Due to the inherent nature of the rake, firearms have an indeterminable effect. As people are either too scared or nihilistic to make the attempt, the rake, due to its feeding capabilities, will, when it finds a suitable host, torment the victim with night visits and the aforementioned aura of nihilism. There is a theory that the youngest daughter was taken not for food, but to make another rake. While this is wholly speculation, it is the best theory that is agreed upon by the majority of the morticians. Case number five, werewolves. Werewolves, or the most encompassing term, therianthropes, unlike the deplorable representation in the crimes against literature referred to as the Twilight Saga, or as I refer to it, why I am glad I have no emotional connections to people. From the vocal interjections, Teen Wolf would be a far greater viewpoint. Apparently, therianthropes are more like guardians than monsters. Some therianthropes can have their minds twisted by their capabilities. Therianthropy refers to the ability to turn into an animal through unknown means. Werewolves are the more acknowledged example of this. But apparently, any strong enough connection to a spirit animal and training that differs from person to person, you can actually gain the ability to shapeshift. This shift is to a hybrid form of human and animal, but very rare therianthropes can shift completely into the animal form, though these are more rare than an honest used car salesman. Therianthropy, or shifting, is different to the few other forms that other cryptids are able to replicate. The closest example is a skinwalker. However, due to the secrecy of Native American shamanistic rituals, we are unable to explain the ritual. And given the levels of stupidity and curiosity people can demonstrate, it would be dangerous to go ahead and give out that information. For the therianthropy, the training stages allows the shifter to adapt to things like the skin of the animals, the muscles and speed, but the most tricky aspect is the mentality. Physical changes can be eased into to allow greater control, but the mental changes are just the part where shifters can turn feral if the human mind doesn't gain dominance. One of these cases will be used as an example. However, those who do make the shift successfully, they elect to use their powers to hunt the more dangerous cryptids and play guard duty for the bigger dangers. Though while these Therians were effective in cryptid combat, they couldn't fight them all. The rake has an especially destabilizing effect on Therianthropes. The Skinwalker trigger a truly heightened fight or flight response. The fight would be to the death, typically the Therian. The common Therian forms are wolf, horse, boar, and bear. There are others, but I'm only mentioning the most relevant ones. Journals and maps indicate the location of where the last true werewolf was eventually killed. The language is not English, but something was able to get translated. Again, the language is not something that I will disclose. The following is an entry into the journal. We have been hunting him for the past 6 weeks. His aggressive nature is causing his trail to be easy, but we are patient. We know he is the last. The Inquisition, the Shadow One, has killed many werewolves and eliminated most of the more insidious vampires, but this lichen has proved to be a cunning predator, almost apex. He has avoided the small hamlets in the area. He must be hungry. This makes him even more dangerous, a predator that is hunted, hungry, and desperate. I do not expect any of us to live through this hunt, but his death is required. Therian too has informed us that we have found a lair. Tracks and recent kills indicate that it could be the lichens. We spread out and attune our senses to sharpen. There are 5 other Therians, including myself. Therian 4 is a bear shifter. She is looking at the mouth of the lair with an odd expression. Human. The Therian whispered, all our eyes snap at each other. This changes things. A hostage or a snack? Unless we move, the human is dead. As the hunt leader, I walked into the clearing. I'm a wolf shifter. There are 2 boar shifters, the bear shifter and a horse shifter. The others follow me into the small clearing. The boars were twins. They nod at me. We know our roles. The boars were to play bait. The horse shifter was a trained healer. The bear shifter is the main powerhouse. As a wolf, I have an inherent understanding of team leadership. I howl, reaching that primal aspect, issuing a challenge. The others scatter to the positions. I stand in front of the lair mouth. A growl that seems to shake the entire forest ripples from the lair. It's stalked out with restrained strength. I charged at it, and I knew the response. It charged at me. The lichen leaped at me, but I slid along the ground as the boars charged in together. Their tusks barely broke its skin. From this point, the writing in the journal changed in style. The language was the same, but the writing is shakier. And this is the entry. It was apex. A lichen reached to the pinnacle. We won't survive this fight. The bear charged in with a roar like a volcano. The blows seemed to shake the very air around us all. The leader started darting in and out, snapping at hamstrings and other weak points. The boar started to mirror their attack, aiming for the same spot on the opponent's side, if that makes sense. The fight was the most brutal I had ever seen. The lichen's claws easily ripped through our flesh. The bear was greatly wounded, and the hunt leader was missing his throat, still clutched in the lichen's right hand. The surviving boar was being held up in the left hand, and its kicks were getting weaker. I move and strike. My kicks are powerful. I reach out with a kick and slammed into its throat. I can feel the windbox collapse beneath my hoof. He throws the boar away. A loud crack answers the question I dreaded. I start to dart aside, but with his last few breath, he managed to slash against my stomach. Then he collapsed. I took the book from the leader and have documented the final fight. I am dying, but this needs to be recorded. I am going to ask the human who is staring at us. Get him to hand this journal into a sage. We fought well. All these cases and many more. That is what I do. I archive them. But into a very deep and hidden part of the web. Very, very deep and not easily found. Because if it were, there would be panic.